And this is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. The time is just 18 minutes after 8 o'clock. And today is Thursday. It's the 6th day of February. And it marks the beginning of Sitka Jazz Fest. Brown Bag concerts will be today and tomorrow. And the evening concerts will be held tomorrow and Saturday at the Sitka Performing Arts Center. The Brown Bag lunches are at Harrigan Centennial Hall. For more information about all of the events, you can visit sitkajazzfest.com. And I'm fortunate to have guest Eric Marienthal in the studio with me this morning, a jazz musician who has just arrived in Sitka to perform and teach at the Sitka Jazz Fest. Eric, thank you so much for coming into Raven Radio.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, you flew in just last night?
Yeah, just after sunset. So we saw a little bit of the sunset. I was dying to see, you know, Sitka, you know, in the daylight. But we did. I flew from Los Angeles to Seattle and then here through Ketchikan. And it was daylight when we landed there. And it was just, you know, I was looking out the window wondering, you know, I don't really see, I see a lot of trees, but I don't really see any airports nearby. So fortunately, there was one.
Well, and this morning you got to see, looked out the window and saw Mount Edgecombe, and the mountains are a wonderful part of our scenery around here.
Yeah, we were talking just now about, you know, about sliding down on the rain pants. Come on.
Well, I think maybe that might be what we do later today. We'll take you up there and do a little sliding down on
after
the mountain.
After rehearsal, let's go.
So you've been a musician in your head since you were a child. You had the notion that you would become a professional musician and travel around playing music. At what age?
Well, I started playing in fourth grade when I was 9 years old. It was in high school, though, that I was really getting into it, and there were some older students who were talking about becoming professional musicians talking about, at that time, you know, we were listening to jazz, you know, the jazz greats like Dizzy Gillespie and Miles, and it was just so intriguing and sexy, you know, it just seemed so inviting that, I kind of never really looked back. People always ask me, you know, what made you or what point did you decide to pursue music as a career? And I can't really answer that because I think it all just sort of kept going. You know, there was just a momentum that built. And, you know, fortunately, I went to a great high school that had a really strong music program. And, you know, it was always just the thing to do. And I never really kind of thought that I should do anything different, really.
What made you pick up the saxophone?
Well, actually, I wanted to play the trumpet when the district teacher came along when I was nine and said, you can play any of these instruments if you want to. You can go and rent one and join the band. And she looked at me and said, no, you know, trumpet would be a bad idea for you because I see you're wearing braces and that would be a problem. You know, you wouldn't have a lot of fun. So I saw an alto saxophone on the table, having no idea what it actually sounded like. But three of my friends and I, who all started at the same time, who all play and we're all friends even today now, said, yeah, that one looks pretty cool. Let's play that. You know, what's that called? You know, he said, oh, that's an alto sax. And so
it never looked and never looked back.
Yeah.
Well, you ended up after your high school, you went to the Berklee School of Music, mm-hmm. and that's in Boston, Massachusetts. And tell me a little bit about how that experience changed your approach.
It was, you know, so many things about Berklee were valuable. The main attraction for me was Joe Viola, the saxophone, the main saxophone teacher, and I was lucky enough to get him right off the bat. I just learned, you know, when you're with a great player who knows how to teach, it's just so invaluable. You need to have somebody, a mentor, somebody who you can follow and watch and learn from.
What's an example of knowing how to teach?
Well, being able to explain what you're doing. You know, a lot of people are able to play, but there are a lot of great musicians who I've encountered who just do it. You know, they're just gifted. And, you know, it's not like you wake up and boom, you can just do it, obviously. But you know, to a lot of people, it's just a very natural process. And so to be able to, you know, examine what you do and put it across to a student who, you know, has been playing maybe, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, you know, less time than you have, and explain what you're doing in a way that they can not only understand, but then, you know, step by step run a process that can get them to the point that they want to get to.
Mm-hmm. You, I read that that was a time of your life where you were spending 4 hours a night practicing. And I imagine that that includes schooling and playing during the day. That's just such a high volume of playing the instrument.
Yeah, that's what it takes, you know. What didn't Einstein say that if you want to become an expert at something, you need to spend 10,000 hours doing it? You know,
was that in your mind when you were doing it? I mean, would you ever calculate, or would you? and was it work, or was it joy, or a mixture? Describe that.
Well, it was it was joy that went to a passion that ended up becoming an obsession. Quite frankly, you know, I was really inspired by Joe and the other, you know, faculty at Berkeley and the other students for that matter, and it just became like a. After college, I had these books that I, you know, really became obsessed with finishing every day. And they were entire technique books that I would play three or four of these books every single day. And I practiced about 3 or 4 hours every day in school. But when I finished school, I went back to Los Angeles, got an incredibly inexpensive place to live where I could practice, and practiced all day. I had a little job, and when I wasn't working, I probably practiced 7, 8 hours. I just practiced all day.
Wow.
And if I couldn't finish, I you know, would beat myself over the head.
Well, and that ended up taking you to New Orleans, which must have been an amazing experience to be seeped in the Crescent City for a while.
Yeah, that was great. I had the honor of playing with Al Hurt for a year, and that's why I moved to New Orleans. And especially back then, I mean, there was so much music going on and just the environment. I'm now reading a fantastic biography of Louis Armstrong, and he, you know, of course, comes from New Orleans, and just, you know, now with my own memory and then reading this biography of his upbringing, it makes it very, you know, well, fairly real to me, and I can sort of envision some of the places he talks about. But yeah, it was just such a fantastic hub of music. It was alive.
Well, then back to the West Coast and getting getting some time to play with Chick Corea and his electric band. Some highlights there?
Well, I you know, Chick Corea is one of the all-time great musicians. Getting to play with Chick, you know, the band was, you know, running hard there for about 15 years. And we still, just last year, we did a reunion week at the Blue Note in New York. And, you know, Chick is just on fire as much as he ever was. You know, there are so many things I always say to every musician I ever meet that asks me about that experience. I always say, I wish every musician could have that experience of working with a musician like that, where we would do tours for a month, 2 months, sometimes 3 months at a time. One tour, we were on the road for 90 days and we played 82 different cities across 24 different countries. And, you know, that was obviously pretty grueling. Yet every night, Chick would play completely uniquely and fresh and just as inspired as if had just done a one-off at Carnegie Hall. And you know, he was older than the rest of us. And we thought, well, man, if he has that kind of energy and can be that creative, you know, and that on it every night, you know, we have no excuse. So it was just the most inspiring thing, and it carries over.
Contrast that experience, that fresh improvisational live experience, with the recording that you did with the electric band and won 2 Grammys with.
Right. The first record we did was sort of a produced record where it was, you know, layered, and you know, one thing at a time was created like a typical, you know, pop record, quite frankly. And he hated that process. And from then on, for all the rest of the records, they were completely live. We would rehearse and then walk into the studio and do the entire record in a matter of a couple of days. And as frightening as that is, because, you know, you play and those records were popular and, you know, you knew that whatever you were playing was going to go out there and it was going to be on that record. And so it was a great learning experience, and yeah, 2 of the records won Grammys, and that was quite a thrill.
Well, now you have you've begun giving time to those that are learning the process of learning jazz or an instrument or musicianship even. You've been writing some books about how to approach playing music, and you're clearly attending festivals to work with students. How does that come around in your career as something that you want to do?
Well, I love it. I play in a band called the Gordon Goodwin Big Fat Band, and it's a very, very popular band. We just came back from France Monday, and it's a popular band, especially among high school and college students. The music is just really accessible. And so the lead trumpet player, Wayne Bergeron, and Gordon and I, and several other guys actually in the band, also do a lot of workshops and clinics in schools. And through the band, and actually I had a relationship with Alfred Publishing. I've got three of my instructional books on the same company that now publishes the Big Fat Band books as well. And it's great. It's great to talk to students about the mechanics of doing what you want to do. There's the music side of playing, but then there's the technical side as well. And so you have to separate the two. And the mechanical side is simply, you know, the grunt work that we were talking about. Not simply, and not grunt work, quite frankly, but it's the, you know, it's like an athlete training for a marathon.
It's those 10,000 hours.
It's those 10,000 hours, yeah. You've got to spend, but the trick is to spend those 10,000 hours in the right way. You can practice the wrong kinds of things, and that's going to take you.